It's Saturday, September the 26th, 2015. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, good evening and welcome to a differently themed podcast, but I hope an important and compelling one. That because I am publishing it here on my main podcast channel will reach a wider audience. Yesterday on Friday at our men's group at our church in Edmond at First Presbyterian, we heard a great presentation from Dan Strahan, who is the executive director of the Oklahoma City Homeless Alliance. And we've been studying reading a book called Just Like Me, for a couple months in our men's group, and it is the story of a homeless man originally from Louisiana who made his way to Fort Worth, and the story of a couple who connected with him through the homeless shelter in downtown Fort Worth, and it is really an incredible story. It's a story of God's power and just the amazing ways in which people are brought together and make connections and can find redemption and a second chance, and it's powerful. And I will link that in the podcast show notes. As many of you may know, my wife, Shelley, teaches at Positive Tomorrows, which is one of only two private schools in the entire United States that serves just children who are homeless. There's another one in San Diego, California, called the Monarch School. But Positive Tomorrows is really, really unique. And because of that and Shelley's work prior to that at our church as the director of our nursery and getting connected with many single moms in a lower-income housing area that wasn't far from our church, connections with folks who are in mission and ministry to those in poverty and the homeless in Oklahoma City, she got connected to Corey Hall, who's since become a good family friend. Corey had worked at the City Rescue Mission, one of seven missions that is here in Oklahoma City for the homeless. She now works for a group called City Care. And, you know, when Shelley started working for Positive Tomorrows a couple years ago and we'd get together with Corey, one of the thoughts that would always go through my head is, oh my gosh, who else knows this? Who else knows this story? Or, you know, who else knows about what's happening, about, you know, these needs, about these services? I mean, many times there are, you know, great stories of hope, but there's also, you know, just really trying stories because as Dan talks about in this presentation, the reasons why people become homeless are very complex, and there's a lot of overlap in different things. And so I firmly believe, and I'm passionate about using technology to amplify voices, not just student voices in the classroom, but other voices, voices in our community. And so that's why I'm sharing this podcast here on the Speed of Creativity podcast channel, because I just hope that not only will hopefully the message inspire you to find out what's happening in your local community in terms of services to the homeless and ways to get involved and ways that you can volunteer, but also ways in which you can use just a simple smartphone like I did this past Friday, yesterday, recording the presentation and then asking Dan afterwards if it was okay to share this online. So I want to definitely point you to the podcast show notes where you're going to find the link to the Homeless Alliance. You'll find a link to the Just Like Me book. You'll find the links to Positive Tomorrows. As you're going to learn, the Homeless Alliance is kind of a one-stop shopping spot for folks who are homeless and in need in Oklahoma City. And I absolutely love and am so glad that they are pursuing this housing first strategy. And I heard a really good NPR, and I might be able to put that in the show notes as well, about this a few months ago. It's really counterintuitive to some folks to say, oh, here, we're going to help you get in housing, and then we're going to help you with this the multitude of other problems that you have. And Dan explains this in his presentation that, you know, it's just not a working strategy for the vast majority of people who are homeless if you say all these preconditions that people have to, you know, meet before they can get into housing. So This is a great presentation. I want to thank Dan for coming to our men's group, and I want to encourage you again to not only plug in to groups that are seeking to serve the homeless and the poor and those less fortunate in our communities, but also find ways to use technology. If you are listening to this podcast, you are an outlier because, you know, there's a small fraction of people today listening to podcasts and, you know, getting their information that way. And so I want to encourage you to not only consume and listen to podcasts, but create them and find ways to amplify important voices in your community that others may not have heard and may not have, they may not have an opportunity to hear, but for your taking the time to record and getting permission from, you know, the speaker or speakers and being able to share that online. So without further ado, it's back to First Presbyterian Church, Edmond, Oklahoma, yesterday on Friday, the 23rd of September, 2015, listening to Dan Strahan, Executive Director of the Oklahoma City Homeless Alliance.
Dan, I'm the exec and the founder of the Homeless Alliance in Oklahoma City. The Homeless Alliance, our mission is rallying our community to end homelessness. And astute folks like you all will recognize that in a mission like that, there's nothing about feeding the hungry or clothing the naked or healing the sick or housing the homeless. We really don't think that's our job. Our job is to help the 100+ government, faith-based, and nonprofit agencies in Central Oklahoma who are already doing all that work to do it better, to be more cost-effective, to be more efficient, to adopt best practices from around the country, bring them here, to do a better job on homelessness. So, one of the things that we have done is we have created a campus for homeless services west of downtown Oklahoma City called Westtown Homeless Resources Center, and that's where Mike toured yesterday. We have that whole block, and on that block is a 17,000-square-foot resource center, and it's just an office complex. There's nothing really fancy about it. What's fancy is what happens there. So, homeless families with children, homeless people generally, it's never one thing. It's never, I lost my job and so I'm homeless. It's, I lost my job because I drink too much. And I drink all the time because I've got bipolar disorder. And I can't access mental health care for my bipolar, so I self-medicate with alcohol. And between the drinking and the bipolar, I've wrecked my physical health, and I can't get access to primary health care, so I'm sick all the time. So even when I get a job, I can't keep it because my absenteeism is so high, or I show up to work drunk, and I lose the job. And because that's been going on in my life for a few years, I've been evicted twice, and now even when I have a job and I have some money, nobody will rent to me because I have this awful eviction history. And because living with that kind of chaos is challenging, every now and then I take my frustrations out on the kids and I'm in trouble with DHS. And that may sound like it's just a wild concatenation of stuff, but it is literally every homeless family that we see at the Resource Center. And there is no single agency in Central Oklahoma that can address all those issues. And so what we had in Oklahoma City was, we called it the referral method of case management. So, I'm sorry, tell me your name.
Mark.
So Mark shows up at a service provider, let's say NorthCare, and he describes all these issues. And NorthCare says, well, you know, I can help you with your bipolar, but for the drinking, you're going to have to go to Hope. And I'm literally going to write you a letter to that you can give to Hope, and then they will serve you. And give that letter to Mark, and he troops down to Hope Community Services, and they say, you know, I can help you with that alcoholism, but for your eviction history, you're going to need to talk to legal aid. And we would literally write a letter, and he would take that letter to legal aid. And legal aid would say, you know, I can help you with your eviction history, but for job placement services, you're going to need to go to team. And they would write a letter. And for a person in crisis with a mental health issue or a substance abuse issue or both, just managing, keeping all those appointments is daunting to at best. And in a city like Oklahoma City that's as spread out as we are, with a public transportation system, does anybody in here work for Embark? Okay. I want to be diplomatic. So with a public transportation system that is less than robust, just getting from one appointment to the next can be really challenging. And so as a community, we saw people kind of falling through the cracks all the time. And as a community, our length of time homeless, our average length of time homeless was longer than in other cities. And so what we've done at the Westtown campus is we've put all those providers under one roof. Okay? So, and you do that for the same reason that you build a shopping mall, right? It's just more efficient for the customer to be able to access multiple services in one spot, right? It's a one-stop shop. We actually go a step further at Westtown, though, so that the case managers at all those agencies that office at Westtown function as if they all work for one really big organization with a lot of programs rather than the 35 organizations that they actually are. So, and here's how that works. So a family or an individual comes in, and they'll meet our director of first impressions. That's the job title of our receptionist. And then, that's good. You know, I stole that from State Department of Commerce.
Well, they need a divorce.
She'll greet them, and we want her to treat Joe Chronically Homeless Guy the same way that she would treat John Russell's or Larry Nichols when they walk in the door, with dignity and respect and the courtesy due any of our brothers and sisters. Then they will be assessed, and we use a tool called the SPADAT. It's a horrible name. Service Prioritization and Decision Assistance Tool. And I didn't create it. But it is a national best practice. And it just asks a whole bunch of questions that help us figure out what it is you're going to need in order to get back into housing. And then you'll be assigned to one of our case managers. And it might be North Care, it might be NSO, it might be Positive Tomorrows, it might be Hope, it might be Red Rock, it might be whoever. We're going to try and put you with the case manager whose expertise matches your biggest problem. But it doesn't really matter because all the case managers have agreed that we can access and utilize one another's assets and resources as if for that moment we worked for your agency. So let's say Mark goes, he gets our North Care case manager, and in working with Mark, the North Care case manager determines that the best option for Mark is he goes into NSO's housing, Neighborhood Services Organization. Well, again, in the old model, we'd write a letter to NSO. He would take that to NSO. NSO would do a separate intake. They would determine if Mark was eligible for their programs. And then within a couple weeks, maybe a month and a half, they would put Mark into their housing. And he would become NSO's client. At Westtown, the North Care case manager just puts Mark into NSO's housing. That day, if we can work it out, there's no referral, there's all the paperwork is on the back end. And I should say, there's really not even any paperwork. Because one of the things the Homeless Alliance is we are the information technology provider for about 70 faith-based and nonprofit agencies working with the homeless in Central Oklahoma. So we provide the Homeless Management Information System, which is a giant database that allows agencies that are serving the homeless to collect data on those they serve and on the outcomes of the programs that they provide. And it also allows those agencies to share data on shared clients. So in Mark's case, he's being seen by North Care and NSO and Hope and Legal Aid. And who else did I mention? If you have kids, Positive Tomorrows. All of those agencies are on HMIS, and all of them can coordinate their care for Mark through that information technology infrastructure. At Westtown, that information technology, because all the agencies are sharing their assets and resources, not only do we have to have a fairly robust client database, but we have to have a pretty good inventory management system, basically, because I don't want North Care's case manager to put Mark into NSO's housing if NSO doesn't have a vacancy, right? So my asset management system on the other side has to know what everybody's assets are and which ones are available on a given day. And so that's another function that the Homeless Alliance provides to the continuum of care for the homeless. Also on the campus, and I assume you went over to the day shelter. We operate Oklahoma City's only day shelter. When we first started the Homeless Alliance 11 years ago, one of the things we discovered was that Oklahoma City was perceived to have a much larger homeless population than we actually did. And the reason why was they were super visible during the day. And the reason for that was is we have 7 overnight homeless shelters in Oklahoma City. And all but one put people out during the day. It allows them to keep their costs low, and the assumption is you're out trying to either access services or find a job. So for those with really high barriers to accessing services or finding a job, that just meant they kind of wandered around the core of downtown, and we are de facto day shelter for Oklahoma City was what, anybody guess?
Library,
exactly. And to their everlasting credit, they were very welcoming of that population. But libraries are staffed by, what, librarians, right? And what these guys need are social workers, case managers. So when we announced that we were going to build a day shelter for Oklahoma City, it came out in the paper, and literally the first telephone call I got was from the director of the Oklahoma Metropolitan Library System, who said, "You gotta let us put a little branch of the library in your day shelter." And we do have a little library in the day shelter. The day shelter also has computers and telephones and showers and serves breakfast and lunch. But the idea behind the day shelter is lowest possible barrier to entry. And as a consequence of that, the day shelter serves about 275 people a day, of whom about 65% are unsheltered homeless people. They live on the streets, under park benches, in camps, under bridges. Now, as I said, we have 7 homeless shelters in Oklahoma City. We have adequate beds for the entire homeless population of Oklahoma City. But a significant number of homeless people don't, won't, or can't go to the overnight shelters. There are 3 main reasons why people don't, won't, or can't go to an overnight shelter. The biggest one is substance abuse. All our big shelters are faith-based organizations for whom sobriety is a central tenet of getting better. And so if you are in such a state with your addiction that you can't go 8 hours without a drink or a rock or something, you will get put out of those shelters, and you won't be allowed back in until you can demonstrate your sobriety. So that's one main reason, the biggest reason, substance abuse. Second biggest reason is untreated, persistent, and severe mental illness. So all of our big shelters are big sort of barracks-type environments. So, you know, I have 50, even 100 beds in a single room. And if you've got severe and persistent mental illness and you're periodically shouting at someone that nobody else can see, that doesn't work out that good in a big room, right, with 100 people. And so, again, you'll get put out and you don't get allowed back. And then the third reason people won't, can't, or don't go to the overnight shelters is they have a companion animal from which they will not be parted, for whatever reason. So at the day shelter, again, lowest possible barrier to entry. So if you are staggering drunk, I would rather have you in the day shelter where somebody can be talking to you about housing, about treatment programs, about putting down the bottle. I'd rather have you doing that than passed out at 23rd and Penn. If you're floridly psychotic and you're shouting at people nobody else can see, I would rather have you in the day shelter than doing that on the steps of City Hall. So the day shelter can be a very entertaining place to be.
Very calm, Mr.
Well, good, good. That's
I thought so too.
I wonder what that is. And again, we have our day shelter because we want to reduce the barriers to you getting into the system. The day shelter has a kennel. And I mentioned we average 275 guests a day. That's 275 two-legged guests. We average about 12 four-legged guests a day. We do have volunteer veterinarians who come in every couple of weeks, actually, and do vaccinations and all that kind of stuff. I had a deal with OSU, which had a mobile spay neuter. Thank you. Yeah, he got that from.
Don't do that.
They had a mobile spay neuter clinic, and they were coming out once a quarter. But for whatever reason, homeless people do not want to neuter their dogs. And no matter how much you talk to them about it, that's the day shelter. And then we just opened housing on the east end of the block. It's at 20 units of what's called SRO housing, single room occupancy. It's really more like a dorm room than it is like an apartment. And it is expressly for chronically homeless and veterans. And right now, it's almost all veterans in there right now. Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. I want you all to feel free to ask questions. If you have any. The last thing I kind of want to tell you about that the Homeless Alliance is doing is we're a convener and we facilitate collaboration. That's our total job. So, like on the campus, we have about 70 paid employees on campus, but only 12 of them are Homeless Alliance employees. The others are, you know, the VA and DHS and North Care and Red Rock and Hope and Legal Aid. Our job, again, is helping all of them do a better job through information technology, through concentration of services and best practices like the SPDAC. One of the things we started really in 2012. So in 2011, the Homeless Alliance, working with the City of Oklahoma City and some other entities, did a really comprehensive cost of homelessness study for Oklahoma City. And the total cost of homelessness for Oklahoma City for that calendar year, 2011, was $28 million.
Yeah.
So, but the, sort of the surprising thing to us about that was only half of that was being incurred by entities like mine, like homeless service providers, Salvation Army, City Rescue Mission, Jesus House, Grace Rescue Mission, all the, only half of the 28 million. The other half, 14 million, was all public services costs, police department, fire department, ambulances, hospitals, county jail, emergency rooms. So 14 million. Of that 14 million, almost all of that was incurred by the chronically homeless population. And chronic homeless is, it's a term of art that HUD uses. It means a person who's been homeless for a year or more, or been homeless four times in 3 years, and has some disabling condition. And it's almost always mental illness or substance abuse, but it could be a developmental disability, it could be a physical disability. So it's people that are homeless for long periods of time or are homeless over and over and have some barrier. So that 14 million, almost all of that is incurred by that segment of the homeless population, chronically homeless. And here's the kicker, it's 50% of the cost, it's 15% of the homeless population. So 15% of the population is sucking up way more than its sort of allotted cost. So the Homeless Alliance brought together 40 government, faith-based, and nonprofit agencies. We started a program originally called 100,000 Homes, and now it's called Journey Home OKC. And it was to adopt a best practice that's used in other cities to great effect, but is somewhat counterintuitive, or maybe not, it was to me. And it's called Housing First, and the name is very descriptive. You ask a 5-year-old, how do you fix homelessness, kindergartner, and what are they going to say?
Get a home.
Get a home. That's it exactly. So, and that's all Housing First is. It's you take that guy, that chronically homeless guy with severe and persistent mental illness for which he is self-medicating with alcohol or other drugs, and you take him right out from under the bridge, put him into housing, and then wrap him around with the services that he will need to be able to sustain that housing. That's Housing First. It is housing without preconditions. And when you stop and think about it, it makes some sense, because if I go to that chronically homeless, Florida psychotic, drug addicted guy under the bridge and say to him, what's your name?
Jim.
Jim, if you will put down the bottle for 90 days, I'll get you into housing. While Jim is still suffering from mental illness and still living under a bridge, the likelihood of him being able to put down the bottle while that's going on is vanishingly small. So instead, with Jim, you just say, okay, Jim, you got a serious mental illness, you got an alcohol problem, we're going to put you into housing, and every day a case manager is going to say, hey, Jim, First Step is open. They got a slot for you. You want to go to First Step? And if Jim says, nope, don't want to go, then we say, okay, I'll be back tomorrow to annoy you again. But he doesn't lose his housing. Nobody in Oklahoma City was using Housing First because like I said, counterintuitive that you offer something without preconditions. It's not out without conditions. Once you're housed, you still have to behave like a tenant behaves, but without preconditions. Can that really work? And some of the old line providers said, you can't do this. These people will burn down their apartment and kill somebody else, and it's going to be bad, and the Homeless Alliance reputation will be trashed, and it's just going to be ugly. So we started in 2012, and we're super data-driven in everything we do. So we started out with a big survey of chronically homeless, unsheltered people, find out what their vulnerabilities and barriers were, and then we just started putting them into housing with wraparound services as they got into housing. And we've been doing it since January 2013. And we have a 90-plus percent one-year housing retention rate. So we take that guy out from under the bridge, and nine times out of ten, he's going to get better. Last year, we kind of changed our focus a little bit, and again, because we're super data driven, we put numeric goals on ourselves, and we as a community just have two goals, and they're super simple: zero homeless veterans in Oklahoma City by December 31st of this year, and we're down to less than 100. And you know, we've got 3 months basically.
Where'd you start?
323. So that's goal one: zero homeless vets by the end of this year, zero chronically homeless by the end of next year. And that one's going to be a little bit harder, but I think if we hit the vets record, we'll have demonstrated that you can get to zero. Now, I should mention that when I talk about zero, they call it functional zero. So I recognize that if I have zero homeless veterans on December 31st, that on January 2nd, some veteran's going to get evicted and become homeless. So when I say we have to be at zero, that means we as a community have mechanisms in place so that if when that vet becomes homeless on January 2nd, we can get him into housing in 30 days or less. And so it's not just a big push and then great, we're done. There's some ongoing work after that. I have no idea what time it is, but I'll take questions.
Oh, okay. You said just put them in?
Yeah.
Wrap them with service.
Yes.
Here's the deal. Which one is first, the chicken or the egg? Because if you take a guy who's unstable, you put him in a housing, you need to treat him first. You need at least to stabilize him first so he can know at least what you're providing for him. Otherwise, it's going to be trouble for the people there and you're not going to be able to control him.
You would think that. And that's why I was saying that housing first model, it can be counterintuitive. But if you try to stabilize someone who is street homeless, the success rate at that is, as I said, and think about it this way. Think about mental illness the same way we think about other kinds of illness. We would never say to a person with pancreatic cancer, if you will just get that tumor under control, I'll provide you with services. That's not how we do. We get them into the hospital, we do the treatment, and then they get better while they're sheltered. You can't get better, it's really hard to get better, especially if you're homeless and substance abuse, if you're living on the street. Yes, sir?
Why don't more of the open tank shelters put a kennel in to keep these people that won't be separated from their animal off the street?
I'm going to say, I can't speak for all the shelters, although I have lunch with them every month. Partly it's a liability issue, and partly it's an issue of, and I, as a person who has had dogs all my life, I ask myself this question sometimes. You can't take care of yourself, you've got no business trying to take care of a dog.
Yeah, but you can't keep from it.
Yeah, you can't, and especially for people, and this is how what I remind myself of, for people with mental illness, for people in crushing poverty. Having a companion animal is the only genuine positive regard that they get in their life. You know, that dog is the only thing that's happy to see them at the end of the day. And so it becomes super important. And yes, they should have YWCA, which runs our only domestic violence shelter, is building a new building, and it will have a kennel. Partly because some women decline to leave their abuser because they're afraid the abuser will hurt the animal.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Your paint is very difficult and complex product. Very complex. My question to you is this. What is your advice for individuals and groups in terms of the first interface with this problem, trying to help solve it? Where, what do you advise? There are several agencies that are always having something in the mail asking for support. And when I listen to it, it sounds like you are the point man for this issue. I'm just asking what advice you have either this group or individuals who want to get involved in helping solve some of these problems.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, there's almost 100 government, faith-based, nonprofit agencies working at some level or another with the homeless in Central Oklahoma. For those of you that are interested in having an impact, especially the nonprofits and the faith-based organizations are really looking for three things: time, talent, and treasure. Right? So. Most of the nonprofits and the faith-based organizations are always looking for volunteers. And it can be something as simple as, once a month serving breakfast at the convention. Or something as more burdensome a commitment as, serving on a board. Or if you have a particular skill set that agencies need but sometimes have trouble affording, like legal skills or accounting, or when we were building our housing, it would have been really nice for me to have somebody with experience in those issues on my board. But I had to hire that. And it wasn't cheap. So your time and your talent, and then, of course, your treasure. And I would say, if you're going to donate, cash is always better than in-kind because it's easier to manage and it's more flexible. But we all use in-kind donations. So that's a good thing, too.
What's your background?
I'm a banker. Yeah, so I'm in recovery from being. Yeah, so I used to manage the Federal Reserve Bank in Oklahoma City back when it was big and we had 250 employees. And I have to admit that when I was a banker, I knew intellectually that there were poor people in Oklahoma City, but I certainly never really had anything to do with them. But I was doing a lot of volunteer work for United Way, and they asked me to serve on a committee to kind of figure out, is there a smarter way to do homelessness in Oklahoma City? And frankly, part of my naivete was we went to a couple cities that had a reputation for being smart about homelessness and looked at their system. We came back here and we did a kind of a gaps analysis and a community needs assessment to figure out who was doing what, where the gaps were, and then we recognized that with that data, we kind of knew what needed to happen, like a campus for homeless services and a day shelter. But we also knew that an ad hoc group of volunteers getting together once a month for lunch to talk about it wasn't going to be able to make those things happen. And so that group just decided to incorporate as the Homeless Alliance, and I became its first executive director. I will say, as part of my naivete, I've been studying the issue for like a year and a half. And at that time, our point in time number, our any given night number of homeless in Oklahoma City was 2,600. And I thought to myself, this is a banker thinking, 2,600. That's a whippable problem. I mean, you can fix that, right? It's 2,600 people. How hard can it be? Turns out, kind of complicated. But we are now down to 1,300 as our point in time count. And part of that is much better coordination across the continuum of care. Part of it, you know, is a strong economic climate in Oklahoma City and that kind of stuff. But part of it is just better coordination and more best practices. Yes, sir?
Sort of a skeptical question. Is probably our most visible homeless issue that most of us see.
Panhandlers.
They got to stop them.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a perception that a lot of those are frauds.
Yep.
Is that, can you comment on that?
Sure. We did, again, super data-driven with everything we do. So we did a big survey of 200 panhandlers from 122nd and North May to Southwest 74th and Walker, all over Oklahoma City, didn't come to us. What we found in that survey was only about 20% of the panhandlers we talked to were literally homeless. Now, I get literally homeless is a term of art that HUD uses. So if you're staying in a cheap motel from one night to the next, you're not homeless. We didn't count those homeless. So only about 20% were homeless. Many, many were panhandling for cash to support unhealthy behaviors, primarily substance abuse. So we developed a couple of programs. One is Curbside Chronicle, where we actively recruit panhandlers to become independent contractors of ours. They get some case management services, and they sell the Curbside Chronicle magazine. And they actually buy it from us for 75 cents a copy and sell it for $2. So their markup is a buck and a quarter. And we've been doing this for about 2 years. Every panhandler, homeless or not, that we have recruited to become an independent contractor for Curbside has earned enough, consistently enough, to get into and sustain housing.
Did you say 100%?
100%, yeah. The other program we have is called Real Change Vouchers, and we actually sell those. They're booklets of 5 tickets. And on each ticket is the address of City Rescue Mission, Salvation Army, and us. And on the back of each ticket is a bus route map to those places. And then on the end of the ticket is a bus pass that will get you from anywhere Embark picks up one of those 3 places. So if you're a person genuinely in need, whether it's medical care or substance abuse treatment or food or shelter or whatever it is, you give them one of those and you have given them access to where they can get those needs met. If it's a person who's panhandling for cash to support unhealthy behaviors, if you give them one of those, at least you haven't contributed to their ongoing self-destruction.
Hasn't Embark changed some policies with that?
Yes.
Can we help with that?
Yeah.
Can we help advocate? Who do we need to call to help advocate?
Oklahoma City Council.
Can you tell us what's going on with that?
Yeah, so Embark does not want the bus system to be perceived as just for poor people. Their new leadership doesn't like the Real Change Vouchers system all that much. And so our current deal with them is the bus ticket on there is a one-trip pass. Embark no longer sells one-trip passes to the public. They only do day passes. And day passes cost $5. The one-trip passes cost me $1, and so I could sell the books, 5 books, or 5 tickets for $5, because I'd get the printing donated. Nobody's going to buy those books for $25 a pop, and nobody's going to hand out $5 bus passes. You know, you give a couple of bucks, man. So anyway, Embark's trying to kill that.
So we could call city council and say, hey, we need to keep these one-way passes.
So everybody's concerned about panhandling. This is a good tool to reduce panhandling, and Embark really should continue. So, yeah, I appreciate that, Ed.
How do you fund?
How am I funded? Okay, so the Homeless Alliance, our total budget is about $2.5 million. We try really hard to have about an even Steven match of government fee for service contracts and private donations. So we get a good chunk of money from HUD. We don't get any state money. We have a couple hundred thousand that we get from City of Oklahoma City. We're a United Way partner agency. That's about $100,000. And then because we collaborate with all those agencies, we decided early on that we would not do any kind of event-based fundraising. So we don't do golf tournaments or galas or that kind of stuff. And the reason for that is every one of my partners does those all the time. And so if I did them, really, I'd be targeting the same group of donors, and I'd be picking their pockets. And it's hard to get somebody to work with you when you're picking their pockets. So we write private foundation grants, corporate foundation grants, high net worth individuals. My board chair and I like to say, you know, we don't get out of bed for less than $25,000, which is not true. I'd take a dollar off the street if I could. Yes.
What do you do for community services? There are volunteers.
That's an excellent question. So, we have a partnership with an organization called Healing Hands. Healing Hands is the healthcare for the homeless grantee for Oklahoma City, and they operate a clinic at Westtown. Healing Hands can only treat you because of their federal grant is healthcare for the homeless. They can only treat you if you are homeless. And again, homeless, as HUD defines that term. I mentioned there's 1,300 homeless people in Oklahoma City every night. That's literally homeless. So that's an unsheltered person or a person in a homeless shelter or a person in a place not meant for human habitation. That's really only about one-fifth of our homeless population. Four-fifths are what we call couch homeless. So they lost their own housing, but they're staying with a friend or somebody from church or a coworker until they get back on their feet. That's about four or five times the number of literally homeless. Healing Hands can't touch them because they're not homeless, as HUD defines that term. So there's a network of free clinics that's kind of overseen by a group called Health Alliance for the Uninsured, and we do transportation between the clinics. It is a challenge because but it's frankly the same challenge we all face. Sometimes it's hard to get in to see your GP, right? Yeah, it's the same thing.
One more question.
No, it's you, Mark.
I just had an off-home question. You're saying your budget's $2 million. From your background, the database and the asset management that you're talking about doing with that many agencies, I'm assuming one of the reasons you can get that many agencies together is because you provide that service. That's a major incentive for them to join.
Exactly.
That's a massive undertaking for that little amount of money.
Yes.
So, do you have partners that help you with getting products for the computers and the management of that type of database system?
So the grant that we have, we have a federal grant for that. In fact, every entity, usually cities, states, or tribes, that gets HUD funds for the care of the homeless has to have a a homeless management information system to qualify for those funds. And that, and the system has to meet certain criteria. So we developed our own. And at the time, it was costing me about $250,000 a year in staff and just ancillary costs. We have since combined with Tulsa and Ponca City and Lawton, and we always had Norman, and then we were also the provider for rural Oklahoma. So now we have one statewide HMIS, and all those continuums of care, Tulsa and Ponca City and Norman and us, are contributing to that. So my budget actually went down to about $150 a year for the system. And mostly that's staff, because the basic code is already done. Thank you all so much for having me today. Mike passed out some brochures that just has some numbers.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.